Hello to our listeners. Welcome to the Women Governance Trailblazers podcast, where we listen to the journeys of trailblazing women in the corporate governance field, their passions, struggles, and commitment to improving how companies and boards function. My name is Liz Dunshee, and my co-host is Courtney Camlett.
Hi, everyone.
Courtney and I are both passionate about governance, and we want to spotlight some of the trailblazing women who share that passion. We love connecting with guests from different paths and industries to hear their perspectives on what surprised them in their career and where they think the field of corporate governance is going. For this episode, we are delighted to be talking with Carla Munden, Senior Vice President and Chief Audit Executive with Lincoln Financial Group. Across her career, Carla has demonstrated a commitment to continuous improvement and enhanced efficacy based on the latest innovation, technology, and partnerships forged with audit teams, executive stakeholders, and the board of directors. Carla also serves as an independent director of American Express National Bank and is part of the leadership group for the Carolina Cobras, a football team that are members of the National Arena League. And we're excited to hear more about that. Carla also has her own website, which is very cool. We don't meet very many people with their very own website. So you can read more about her experience there. And that site is carlamunden.com. Carla, we're so excited to get to speak with you. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
We are happy to have you. We shared an overview of your extensive experience in the finance realm, including the last almost 20 years as SVP and Chief Audit Executive with Lincoln Financial Group. We would love more detail on your leadership experiences and learnings over the years.
Thanks for that question, Courtney. Because I have spent over 30 years in internal audit and I have reported to a corporate board for almost 20 of those years, I've had the honor of learning from CEOs, CFOs, and various other corporate board members. I've been coached on how to be a better leader, how to be a better communicator. And one of my biggest takeaways has been that leadership is not about where you are on an org chart. It's not about the number of people in your chain of command. Leadership is really about your ability to grow leaders that are better and stronger than you. And it's for that reason I've spent the bulk of my time in leadership growing my direct reports, students, and women. I do my best to coach and mentor them. I share my experience, my faux pas, so that they can grow in leadership roles and that they will have a playbook or a point of reference and/or mentor to help them as they become more successful. With that said, a few of my leadership mantras are: do you want to be right? Or do you want to be effective? Always make decisions for the greater good versus your personal interests. And it's okay. It's absolutely okay to not have all the answers. You surround yourself with people who have strengths that you don't have, and don't be afraid to leverage them to make your decisions better and to bring them into the process with you. So hopefully that gives you just a little bit of perspective of some of my learnings, but also it gives you a little bit more perspective on how I think of leadership.
You mentioned sharing your faux pas. I find that is almost, if not more effective sometimes than sharing what has created a win, because it sort of humanizes your experiences. And not only have you learned from it, but so does your team.
Absolutely. And, we all make mistakes and we all learn from them. And as I've tried to coach different women and students, I've helped them to understand we're going to do that. And you can't hold yourself. You have to get over it. You have to forget about it and keep moving. And so it's hard at times because I think sometimes we hold ourselves to such a standard, but mistakes are going to happen and you're going to learn from them and you're going to be a better leader because of them.
I love those leadership mantras, and I love that attitude too, because it is so easy, especially if you're a high achiever, to beat yourself up over mistakes and, be self-critical and not think about the greater good. And then that can put a cap on where your career goes and how effective you are if you're too busy doing that. And I also think the most secure leaders are the ones who are willing to share those faux pas and willing to bring other people up and not be worried about it, someone taking their own job or something like that. And so thank you for all that you are doing in the field to support future leaders as well. And again, for sharing your time with us today. I saw when I was looking at your LinkedIn profile that you recently returned from South Africa, where you attended a governance program focused on South African board service. And it sounded like such a unique and informative experience. What are the main differences that you saw in governance and cultural structure? And how does that help you think about corporate governance in the U.S.?
Liz, I'm just going to take 1 second just to level set on the program, because I think that will help me to better answer the question.
Yeah.
So I am in a program, it's called Be Direct, but Be Direct is an African-centric board preparation and cultural dexterity program. And it's focused on equipping leaders on how to navigate boards on the African continent. So as you stated, I recently returned from my immersion trip, and that was critical with all the different things that I've been learning to actually go there and see the country, experience meeting with board members, CEOs, et cetera. So while on the continent, a few of my learnings were that African boards and African CEOs, et cetera, they put a high emphasis on relationships and values. They really want to know who you are, and that allows them to know if they can trust you. And while I was in Africa, I experienced 3 and 4 hour lunches as I was talking to CEOs, et cetera, for them to kind of test that whole thought process of who are you? Who are you really? Additionally, in the boardroom, it's not uncommon in Africa to have family members that are part of the board, or to have different ethnic groups. And part of the program that I'm in, they teach you cultural dexterity so you can understand how to interact in those types of environments where it's a different culture and there's different emphasis on different things. And you need to have the ability to navigate those situations. Obviously, there's going to be different languages spoken in the boardroom. And Africa is a patriarchy, and you have to have the right EQ to know when and how to talk and how to maneuver in those situations. And I had a test run of all of that while I was in Africa, and it really helped me to better understand all the things I've been learning over the last few months. From a governance standpoint, the continent uses King IV, and it's a principle-based framework. And it's used across the continent, and it's used for nonprofits, corporate boards, as well as government boards. King IV is very much focused on stakeholder engagement and how the company is delivering on all of the promises that they have to the greater organization and or people. From my perspective, U.S. boards are a lot more focused on your strategic agility. Your personal achievements are what helps you to get on boards. But more importantly, it's also what skill sets you bring to the boardroom and how they augment or interact with the other board member skill sets. And so there's a distinct difference, I think, in how U.S. boards look for board members versus how South African boards. Another thing that I noticed is that King IV incorporates things such as Sarbanes-Oxley and things like that. So it's a very comprehensive principle-based framework. And there is a significant focus on ESG. And it's interesting because as in the U.S., we're still trying to find our way with ESG. In King IV, natural goods and animals and all of those things are very important. And I think we as in the U.S. could learn a little bit more if we look at natural resources and things differently than some of how we are focused on ESG today. Those are just a few of the different things that I took note of as I was trying to compare and contrast the two. I think that both go to the same point at the end of the day, that we need ethical leaders and things of that sort. But I think that there's slightly different ways of getting to the end point.
That's a fascinating perspective. Can I ask 2 follow-up questions?
Absolutely.
Okay. So one, you said that they've sort of imported Sarbanes-Oxley, but you also said that they have a lot of friends and family members on boards. And so is there not the same focus on director independence, like majority director independence there?
There is not the same focus at all. And so in the culture there, you could have a husband and wife. They might be founders, but one or both of them could be on the board, their children, et cetera. So it does, Sarbanes-Oxley type principles are incorporated into King IV, but some things that we put a lot more emphasis on here are not the same there. And so board members can include family members.
Okay. And not that they necessarily can't hear. It's been interesting to see how the listing standards that require majority director independence have morphed into everybody except for the CEO needs to be independent on the board. And there has been some commentary on whether or not that is a good thing. And so anyway, that's fascinating that they have a different approach in South Africa. And I'm curious if that helps with the decision-making process and overall function of the board.
You know, Liz, I would, I'm not officially on a board yet, but I would imagine that it makes it more challenging. Mm. And again, I think that's why some of the emphasis on some of the personality assessments and the cultural dexterity things that we're doing, because it is what it is. But if you are going to be contribute and be a part of the board, and I do think there is room and place for us as Americans to bring different things to the continent. So we have to kind of accept some of what is there and see how we can maneuver and still bring value similar to what we do in America, right? I mean, how do we bring value?
Yeah. And so my second question is, well off of that, is kind of a follow-up to, do they not have the same notion of shareholder primacy that exists here, since you mentioned that they're all about different stakeholders and ESG? And do you feel like that better supports long-term success of the companies, perhaps, than what we see here, where it's, you know, a lot about the quarterly results and returning value to shareholders?
So King's IV was brought out, I think it was introduced in 2016. It was an update from King III. Mm-hmm. King IV did bring more of the shareholder emphasis into the process. And I do think historically it has been very stakeholder focused, but we have to keep in mind too, there's only about 90 to 100 corporations on the Johannesburg Stock Market, which is one of the places I visited. And so there are tons of small companies, there are tons of entrepreneurs, there are government boards, et cetera. And so some of the shareholder focus is important, but it still, you know, it doesn't apply at that level to some of the newer organizations that are up and coming. Yep. And there's a huge entrepreneurial spirit in South Africa. A lot of the younger generation are starting tons of companies that we take for granted. Say we want to Cash App someone. They're creating those types of companies today, and they're finding ways to send something from their town to someone else in another township. And so those companies are just evolving, and they're just trying to keep the lights on. Yeah. And then they hope to one day get to the Johannesburg Stock Market indoor, to even go to the States. But there's tons of smaller companies that whole shareholder value is lesser than what it is here in the States.
Yeah. Oh, that's so fascinating. What a cool experience.
I've heard about companies who are starting to get more into micro lending there too, which is, you know, something that they didn't have as much of previously. So
absolutely, really, Courtney. And one of the other things that I found that was quite interesting, and I actually met with a founder, they will kind of come together as buying groups, and they will do that to get better prices on different things. And so one of the founders I met had recently set up a group to do that. And he has a company that he set up and he's won awards for to create buying groups. And he hopes to continue to grow it across the whole continent.
That's great. Creating platforms like that is you know, the foundation of sort of the startup mentality.
Lots of startups. Yeah. I met with lots of VCs, PEs, and visited accelerators and hubs. And it's quite an interesting booming economy. And there's so many opportunities that the younger generation are just really trying to take advantage. And, you know, they're watching TikTok, they're doing all these things, they're learning a lot, and they're trying to bring those things to their country so that they can take advantage of them.
And I love the word cultural, the words cultural dexterity. I'm now going to adopt those and figure out more ways to use that phrase.
I probably have used it way too many times already, but it really, the flexibility,
yeah.
And again, knowing when to say what to say, I think it's going to be an interesting experience. But I did have a good experience learning that while on the ground. And so I feel so much better equipped as I interview with CEOs, et cetera, for board positions over there.
Yeah, I have a book, Kiss, Bow, or Shake Hands. It's something along those that title. It's a huge tome. So when I travel places I haven't been, I look up the cultural aspects of the area to sort of see how should I behave in that culture.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
So amongst your experiences, you are a Navy veteran, and we are so appreciative of your service. Thank you.
Thank you.
What were the most poignant lessons learned during your service, and how have you carried over those lessons into your corporate life?
You know, the Navy is probably one of the best things I've ever done in my life. First of all, I just share with you, my father was retired Air Force. I joined the Navy right while I was in high school. And I also saw this as a means to have a better relationship with my father. Wow. While I'm the youngest and the only girl, my middle brother actually then went and joined the Army after me. And so we have a little bit of a legacy of service in our family, and I'm very proud of that. As I said earlier, leadership to me is more about what you bring to everyone else versus, again, you know, the fact that you're the leader. And so when I was in the Navy, I learned that it was more important to build up all the people that reported to me and to help them to be their best. And the more I did that, the more willing they were to follow me because they saw it wasn't about me. Being in the military taught me teamwork. It taught me discipline. It taught me work ethic. It also taught me how to be more accountable, how to make decisions with limited information. And that has been a huge thing to take with me throughout my entire career. You know, I think we all would love to have 100% information as we're making a decision. But as leaders, we're always making decisions with the best information we have. And sometimes it's not as complete. And so even in the boardroom, I think so many of these skills are applicable. I think, you know, having camaraderie and good relationships, not only with your fellow board members, but also with management. I also think that as board members, we have to we're not a part of the management team, rightfully so, but we have to make decisions with limited information. And we have to be able to think through and strategize on that. And again, I find that extremely analogous to how things were for me in the military. I think all these skills are important for boards, whether you're on a nonprofit or a for-profit board, any of those things. But I do see high correlation between what I learned in one realm versus how I can use it in the other.
And I think we've seen boards starting to recognize the value of military service as well. Thank you for sharing your experience there. So you serve on the boards of American Express National Bank and the William & Mary Foundation. What similarities have you seen in the not-for-profit and for-profit boardrooms? And what are the top qualities in your mind of effective board members in both spaces?
Great question. I do, you know, I cut my teeth on boards early on, and I served on a lot of nonprofit boards, and I learned a lot on nonprofit boards, as well as working in corporate America. I think it's a great place for us to share our skills in the nonprofit world to help them to be better organizations. But when you compare and contrast nonprofit boards to for-profit boards, I think you still have to act in the best interests of your shareholders or your donors or your key stakeholders. And you have to keep in mind who you really work for. And I think that that's an important premise across all boards. I also think as a member of the audit committee for both William & Mary and American Express, I think it's imperative that we or the board oversee and focus on the financial stability of the organization. We work with the auditors, all of those types of things, just to ensure the sustainability of and the going concern of a public entity versus a nonprofit. I think that it's real important that we look at the CEO or the executive director or the president, and we are looking at their skills, their ability to lead. And again, those are both important things in the nonprofit realm, as well as in the for-profit. You always want, as a board member, you want to ensure that legal and regulatory compliance. And again, as governance folks, we, you know, that's near and dear to all of us. But I think even a nonprofit, that's something you sometimes have to remind everyone else in the room. We need to keep this front and center. And I think that, you know, it's important for profit and nonprofit boards to still have the right mix of skill sets represented on their boards. You know, it's easier sometimes in nonprofits where people are like, I have an affinity for this group and things like that. And you could easily fill your board up with people who are just donors and people who share your vision. But I think it's real important to have others that are bringing different skills, that they might be tied to your vision and they should have some tie to it, but they're also bringing some skills, whether it's legal, compliance, and other things to round out the boardroom.
Yeah, the governance needs to be strong in both types of entities for them Absolutely. To continue.
Absolutely.
So you've been branching out beyond corporate service and recently became a minority owner of the Carolina Cobras, a football team in the National Arena League with home games in Greensboro, North Carolina. Shout out to a place I've called home for the last 14 years. What drove you to make that investment and what tools are you able to leverage when interacting with the team?
So Courtney, let me just share a couple of quick thoughts. And I digress so much in my responses, but growing up in Virginia, I grew up watching ACC basketball and football all of my life. And, you know, if March wasn't March Madness, what was it? And so I have this great affinity for sports. I've lived in numerous states, and every time I've moved, I've always bought season tickets to the home team, and it was either basketball or football. So I had Arizona Cardinals. I don't know if I should say this, but I'm a big Dallas Cowboy fan. Right now, we're not doing well. But football has also been something I've been able to use in the corporate realm to help, you know, cut ice and to start and spark conversations with others. And I actually know a lot of the rules of the game, and I'm proud of that. And so when the opportunity came up with the Cobras, this also gave me the opportunity to almost have football all year round because the Arena League plays from March to June. Right after that, you're starting into college football. And then in October, you're kind of hot and heavy in the NFL. So this was a little bit of a passion play for me to have the opportunity to invest and become a minority interest into the team. As I look at being an owner of the Cobras, I hope to bring some of the same skills that I've used to be successful in my career into the owner's box with the other owners, the emphasis on financial discipline. Also, I look forward to interacting with the players more as we travel to games and things to share some of those types of things with them as well. I think that, you know, as we've talked about here today, corporate governance and things, it actually becomes a part of your DNA, you know, at some point. And so sharing some of those types of premises and framework with the other owners, the players, are things that I hope to do. I hope to leverage a lot of those nonprofit board experiences and relationships I have in town to help grow the team and to just continue to build upon our success as the Cobras.
I can say having proficiency in football knowledge and speak is probably way better in a corporate setting than golf any day.
I think so. It has been an equalizer for me, though. I've been able to have a conversation with almost anybody. The problem is when you go to Africa, football is soccer and all those other things. And so it doesn't translate as easy there.
But you have cultural dexterity. So you're learning to translate it.
That is true.
And I love that you're also bringing corporate governance to professional sports. That's great too, cross-pollinating.
Absolutely. And I'm excited to have that opportunity.
Yeah. Well, our last question is one that we ask all of our guests, and that is, what do you think women in the corporate governance field can add to the conversation on the societal role of companies?
You know, Liz, that's a really interesting question. And I thought long and hard because I wanted to really think through the puts and takes on this one. I mean, I think that women in corporate governance, we bring a unique perspective to any discussion. I mean, sure, we're moms, we're wives, we're daughters, we're all these things. But I think our corporate governance hats helps us to think about and require and want companies to bring to be principled in a very disciplined way. And I mean, I hope that that's clear, but to my mind, it is. I think, you know, we want them to bring goods and be great corporate citizens and all of that, but we want them to be disciplined and we want them to, you know, fulfill their role in society. But we also want it to be from a diverse perspective, and we also wanted them to be ethical. I mean, ethics is, you know, is important. And I think as corporate governance, you know, soldiers, that we should be, you know, asking more of companies in that way. Do it disciplined and, you know, and deliver on your promise to all of us.
So well said.
Thank you.
I like the corporate governance soldiers too.
Well, you know, what more would you ask from a Navy veteran, right?
There you go. Well, Carla, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure.
For those who are listening, we want to thank you as well. Please subscribe to Women Governance Trailblazers on whatever platform you use for podcasts, and we would love it if you would rate us while you're there. In addition, if you know a Women Governance Trailblazer who you think would be a great guest on this show, feel free to ping Liz or me on either LinkedIn or by email.
Thanks, everyone.